Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I was promoting Lost Boys of Hannibal, my first book, in 2018, and was at a book signing in Hannibal at the Mark Twain Museum. And it was well attended. We had over 100 people there, and everyone was interested in hearing about the first book, Lost Boys of Hannibal, which chronicled the May 1967 disappearance of Joel and Billy Hoag and their friend Craig Dowell, who were never seen again. And in the audience, I noticed there's a young woman in the second row. Her cheeks were flushed and she was sobbing quietly. And it was kind of a mystery while I was speaking because I knew she wasn't old enough to have experienced this firsthand, this incident. So afterwards, I met her at the table for a book signing, and she said nothing about her emotional upset. And it was only later that I discovered that she was psychic, and her name is Kat Hunt. She lives in southern Missouri. And she told me that when she has her psychic activities come to the forefront, she gets emotional. And she told me that while I was speaking at my book signing, the spirits, she claims, of the three boys were up front with me, and they were present. And she said it was a classic example of a group intentionality. We had over 100 people focused sympathetically on these three boys, and that attracted their spiritual energy. And they came into our realm from the other side. Well, this was a lot for me to take in, but I did some more checking with her and found out she is completely legitimate. And then there was an incident where one of the Hoag sisters, the sister of two of the Lost Boys, contacted a Hannibal psychic named Brittany. And Brittany did a reading and quickly just exclaimed, "John Gacy killed these boys." She saw it. And she saw the three boys, and they were communicating, saying in unison, "John Wayne Gacy, John Wayne Gacy, John Wayne Gacy," three times. And she said it was very strong, a very strong impression she got. Meanwhile, there was a third psychic in southeastern Wyoming, whom I consider the most experienced of the three. She's worked with police departments many times to find missing persons and bodies and such. And she...
What's her name? Can you tell us her name?
Her name is Mary, and she lives in Wyoming, the state of Wyoming. And she channeled this incident at the request of one of the Hoag family members and quickly saw that Gacy was the killer. And Mary sees things like as if it's a series of photographs laid out on a tabletop. She just gets a clear impression of what happened. She sees everything very clearly in detail. And she saw the three boys being taken on May 10th, 1967, before they were reported missing. He said he'd give them a ride home, and he had befriended them earlier in the week. He'd been on site there for a couple of days. And it's interesting that during the search, the early days of the search, there was a mystery man who was seen high up on the bluff overlooking the road construction that exposed this cave network below Hannibal. And authorities approached this man and asked him, you know, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Oh, I'm just watching the activity." This was kind of a stocky man, 25 to 30. They never got his name. And after that confrontation, he never showed up again. Well, Mary said that mystery man was John Wayne Gacy, that he had arrived in town a few days earlier. And as he so often did with his victims, he befriended them, bought them food, alcohol, what have you, And then when they were trusting him, he would move, and his alter ego, Jack, Bad Jack, the killer, would emerge forward.
Okay, stop right there. Let me ask you something. And I do remember you telling me about the guy on the bluff, but I don't want to lose listeners that haven't actually caught your other interview with me. So if you don't mind to go back, John, to tell them about Hannibal, where the little town is, a little bit about the geography, and then the moment the boys went missing.
I grew up in Hannibal, Missouri, Mark Twain's boyhood home. It's a historic little town of about 20,000 at the time. This was May of 1967. I was 13 at the time. And two of the three boys, Joel Hoag and Billy Hoag, were elementary school friends of mine. And their neighbor, Craig Dell, was the third boy that always hung out with them. And the boys were exploring a cave network that had been opened up during highway construction on the south side of Hannibal. And they would, against the recommendation of the workers at the location, they would race across the busy roadway with heavy equipment all around and jump into these holes and go beneath and explore these vast caverns, some with ceilings, 12, 15 feet high, and others small enough that you had to crawl through. And Hannibal is noted for its maze caves. These are very complex intersecting networks of passages, some tall, some short and narrow. And they were created millions of years ago when that area was underwater. And the water percolated into the Louisiana limestone geology. And over time, slowly expanded the cracks until we have the cave network that exists there today. Well, the boys thought, this was a fantastic boy cave, right? They could have a new hideout, hangout. But eventually they were chased off. Their parents were very short and stern with them about staying out of those caves. They're very dangerous. Well, this was a couple days before May 10th, the last day they were seen. And about 5:15 p.m., they were up on the road cut above where this road construction was happening. It's a very hilly area, and that was the last place they were seen. So it was very traumatic for the town once they vanished, because, it's difficult to fathom. In childhood, we're never really prepared for the deaths of young friends. It seems so foreign and impossible when our buddies are taken, but, life is just beginning, and life is still new. So it was a time of sadness and heartache and emptiness for the people of Hannibal and those of the surrounding areas.
How old were the boys?
Joel Hoag, my close friend, was 13, and his brother Billy was 11, and then Craig Dowell, their neighbor, was 14. And Joel and I were in several classes together in elementary school. And in fact, when we got word that John F. Kennedy had been assassinated, we were sitting across the rows from each other in fifth grade at Stoll School in Hannibal.
Wow. That's wow. You see, when events like that happen, you know exactly where you were when you heard about them,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the boys went missing, and their parents apparently tried to keep them out of these caves. Tell us what happened when the search kicked off and how that got orchestrated.
Yeah, well, police were called the early evening of May 10th. It was a Wednesday, 1967, and almost immediately, a call went out for cavers. And the viewpoint at the time was that it was obvious that the boys probably were lost in this cave network somewhere. That was the last place they were seen. And they had been seen going into a nearby cave that afternoon. So they were going on all the evidence they had at the time. So
yeah, but they didn't know for sure. They didn't know 100%. I mean, it wasn't 100%. They were just going by where someone last saw them, right?
Right. Police were going by the proximity, where they were when they were last seen, and also their behaviors the previous couple of days of exploring these caves. So cavers came to Hannibal, and it became the largest cave search in U.S. history, which unfolded over a month. And even to this day, it remains the largest cave search in history. for our country. And it's the only time that the parties being sought were never found. So, you know, the conventional wisdom for half a century was that the boys were victims of some kind of a calamitous ceiling collapse in a cave passage until, you know, I started encountering these psychics in 2018, and the story really changed dramatically from there.
Did you, let me ask you something about the cave search, because this all also got the attention of, it got the attention of people in Washington, D.C., correct?
Right. At the time, there was a group called the Speleological Society of America that was focused on cave search and rescue. And it was operated by a guy named Bill Harris. And they were based in Virginia. And word, local police contacted the SSA and asked them to come to Hannibal to help coordinate the search. And Harris gathered his team and their equipment and called in a favor of a friend at the Pentagon and ended up flying to Hannibal on Air Force Two the following day. Well, when they arrived, you know, the big show was underway, and it quickly kind of became a carnival-like atmosphere because of all the curiosity and the interest by the locals. And also, Karras was kind of a flamboyant guy. He liked publicity. And here he had this new Speleological Society of America that he wanted to promote. So he was more than accommodating to the news media who wanted interviews and such. And that was something of an irritation to some of the experienced cavers who, you know, usually hit a scene and put their nose down and get down to work. So this unfolded for a month. It was a frantic race against time search. The wives and the moms and grandmas in the neighborhood were making fried chicken and bologna sandwiches, and pies and coffee, and carrying them over to the headquarters in a local church to keep all these men fed. There were two women who were also among the cave searchers, and they were both very petite and really played key roles in being able to get into some of the smaller passages that the men could not access. But after 30 days of this and the cave system and the nearby Murphy's Cave, which is about three blocks away, it was all tied in. They had looked repeatedly in all of these passages and never found a thing. So with that, everyone packed up and went home, and it was a huge disappointment.
Was the cave made like the floor of the cave? Was it made, you know, like, was it rocky, or was it in such a way that they could see footprints of the boys if they went into a certain direction, or no? Do you know?
Yeah, and it was packed clay in the caves, soil that had filtered in over the eons. And, you know, in some cases you might find a footprint, but not always because it's so packed and dry. And they expended all possibilities and all theories and such. So, you know, at that point, the story just fast forwarded to when these psychics came forward and started identifying Gacy as the killer. So at that point, after interviewing them extensively and getting a sense of their credibility, I was really confident that these women were not grandstanding. In fact, they're all Christians, and they were not in it for attention. They made that very clear. So I decided to test them, and I decided to bring all three of them to the Hannibal area at different times in the summer and fall of 2018. And Brittany, who lives in Hannibal, was the first, and I drove her in my SUV around Rawls County, which is about 500 square miles. And we weren't into the tour very long. In fact, we were about 2 miles south of where the boys had last been seen. And we were driving on Highway 79, which was being widened by that road construction. And all of a sudden she goes, "Stop, I need to go there." And she looked west into a forest. And there was a rutted kind of path, car path, into the trees. And it had been there for decades. You could see where the tire tracks had made indentations in the soil. So we go back there, and she says, something terrible happened here. And then another psychic, well, Brittany said, something terrible happened here. And she said, it makes me sick to my stomach. She said, this is, I believe, where they were killed.
And where was she at that time, John?
She was in the woods about 2 miles south of Hannibal, just north of the entrance to a cement plant that's been there for over a century. They make concrete. So at that point, later that same evening, Kat Hunt, who was from southern Missouri, came to Hannibal, and I took her on the same route, touring Rawls County, Missouri, just south of Hannibal. And when we got to the same location, she said, wait a minute, I'm sensing something over here. And she's pointing to the very same area I'd been that previous day with Brittany Buckwalter, the Hannibal psychic. So we stop and we walk up there, and she's getting a real bad vibe. And she says, something terrible happened here. But that was about all she could sense. And Kat at the time was one of the, I would say she was the least experienced of the three. She was just kind of coming into her abilities as a psychic. She's in her 20s, and she'd had these impressions all of her life and hadn't really kind of put it all together until now. And then at that point, it was time to bring the third psychic, Mary, from Wyoming to town. So she and her husband flew in, and I took them on a tour. And she gave amazing details of what she had seen, that Gacy had killed them. He had pre-dug a grave in the woods at this location. And she identified the same spot previous two psychics had identified, 2 miles south of where the three boys had last been seen. And she said that he took the boys out of the car, sodomized one, strangled him, put him in the other hole, in the hole in the ground, took the other one out, clubbed him on the head, sodomized him. And then the last one to die was Billy Hogue, the 11-year-old who was in the trunk of the car. And he was clubbed on the head and strangled. And then he went into the same grave as Joel and Craig was. So as the psychics tell us, the three boys were dead and buried by like 8 or 9 p.m. the very day that they were last seen. So before the cave search was even starting, they maintained that the boys were killed and buried 2 miles south.
Okay, so when the you said that this happened at a time where people were, I find people doing it now, but you said people were a little laxed about where their children went and they didn't watch them so closely or whatever. John, can you tell me the time that elapsed from when they started to really worry about not seeing the boys anymore?
Yeah, when they didn't show up for dinner. I mean, the boys were very gregarious and they always played in the woods, as we all did, riding our bikes around town. It was a very safe community. And, you know, but you never forgot dinner, right? You always showed up for dinner. So when the boys failed to show up, Mrs. Hogue called the local police at about 6:30. And then from that point on, authorities got involved and got things rolling. So now we have three psychics all identify the same basic scenario happened and the same location where they believe the three boys are buried. So at this point, I notify Rawls County Sheriff, and I email him 6 times. I call him 6 times. I send the GPS coordinates for this very location, and I never heard a thing, not a word, which is very unusual. But that sheriff later left office under some interesting circumstances. But so after that, there was a modest search about a year or two later. and they found some bones that they believed were animal bones. And then a mushroom hunter came forward with the entire skull plate of a human. It's like the top half of a human skull, well preserved, and he had found it while mushroom hunting in the 1970s.
In that area?
Yes, in that area. So a genetic test, a DNA test, needs to be conducted still on that skull plate to see if it's ancient, you know, a Native American, or if it's more contemporaneous.
Where is it?
And it could be one of the boys. It's in the custody of authorities.
Okay, let me ask you this. That's interesting. I'm wondering if what's there now. I mean, is it in an area where the psychic said that, you know, they can kind of pinpoint an area where it's not built over, you know, where someone might be able to use, I don't know, ground penetrating radar or something to see if there's bodies buried somewhere or something like that?
Yeah, to my knowledge, I'm not sure that was ever done. I had my source is an investigator who cooperated with Rawls County authorities, and he was unaware of that happening. But the area remains a wooded area. It's very heavily wooded. There's some limestone bluffs along this way, so it's not an area that would, you know, normally be developed.
Has she tried to find the bodies, the exact spot where the bodies are?
They looked. They did a modest dig, but found only these parcels of bone that they couldn't guarantee were human.
I mean, the psychics.
Yes, they identified the same location in this wooded area 2 miles south of where the boys were last seen. So at that point, I left it in the hands of authorities, and they did this dig, and which was something of an inconclusive outcome. And then the story just kind of went on until I was notified by phone in November of last year of a man named Sean Jackson, who was a friend of John Wayne Gacy's. And he said, "Mr. Wingate, I read your book, and I realize you're the perfect person to tell this news to." So Sean Jackson had visited with Gacy 51 times after he went to Menard Prison in 1980 or 79 for the murders of 33 boys in Chicago. That's where most of America first heard of John Wayne Gacy. Sean Jackson would meet with Gacy once or twice a month for a couple of years. And the reason he did so was that he dealt with celebrity memorabilia. He marketed and promoted letters from celebrities like Bob Hope and Lucille Ball and the Jackson family, and would sell them on the internet and or just through a network of collectors. And he was very interested in having someone notorious be in his kind of corral of celebrities. So he wrote Gacy a letter. And Gacy said, yes, he could visit. He'd love to meet him. So Sean Jackson, in the early 90s, drove to Menard, and it was the first visit of several dozen visits over the next 2.5 years. And he said that every time he would meet with Gacy, Gacy had a huge crush on Sean, and who was a good-looking young guy, muscular, blonde hair. And Jackson could only talk about sex. It was sex, sex, sex. And excuse me. Sean was really irritated by this, but just kind of maintained his cool so he can maintain the relationship with Gacy that he hoped would be very lucrative. So over a period of time, he would collect Gacy photos and letters that he would receive from Gacy. And eventually, once Gacy started painting landscapes and portraits while he was a prisoner, Sean Jackson would market these, fence these for him. And he had a collector in Chicago that bought dozens of these paintings, some for many hundreds of dollars or even thousands of dollars. And he would split the proceeds with Gacy. Well, during this time, Sean Jackson, he lived in Hannibal at the time and had suspicions because he well remembered the Lost Boys of Hannibal story and was always suspicious that maybe Gacy had killed them. Because Gacy admitted that he had driven the area quite a bit and had been through Hannibal many times and knew nearby Quincy and nearby Hall, Illinois, small communities to the north and east. So once he approached the subject saying, Gacy, John, do you know anything about these three boys in Hannibal who were missing? And Gacy, no, I don't know anything about them. At the time, Gacy was hoping for a pardon from the governor, but that was clearly not going to happen. So these, you know, tours, visits continued for many, many months. And the last one was on May 9th, 1994, when Gacy was about to be executed. And it was really chaotic. Gacy had been transferred to Stateville Prison to be executed in Chicago. The media was there. It was just a calamity, a carnival circumstance once again. And he saw Gacy again in the visitation area about 8 p.m., just a few hours before Gacy would be put to death. And he just decided, I don't have anything to lose, so I'm really going to, you know, turn up the heat on John to see. So he said, and this is an excerpt from the book, "John, what do you know about those boys in Hannibal? Come on, tell me." "I know nothing about those boys," Gacy calmly insisted. "What do you have to lose?" Jackson countered. "You're going to be executed in a few hours, John." Gacy shifted uneasily in his soiled prison garb, his pants soaked with feces. The stench in the small visitation room was unbearable. Finally, Jackson stood from his chair and tried to close the deal, leaning in close. "John, I've been a friend of yours. I've worked hard to build this relationship. I've driven through sleet and snow to visit you many times. I've sold your paintings. I've enriched you. You owe me the truth. Tell me now, did you kill those boys?" That question hung in the air, and the only sound was the muffled rantings of the other inmates in the cell block, still bleeding through the door. They were yelling, "You're going to die today, Gacy, die." And then laughter and more yelling. It was clearly harbingers of Gacy's imminent fate. This time it was as if the heavens had opened up and the hand of God came down and grabbed the demonic misfit by the neck and gave him a good shaking. Gacy paused, somehow finding a shred of humanity within, and calmly said, "Yeah, I'll tell you where they are." So it was in that electric moment that Jackson finally knew that Gacy had killed the boys. And the book goes into great detail with Gacy's story about what happened with the boys. And the long story short of it is that the boys, according to Gacy, were taken to a motel on the west side of town. And once he got them inside, he threatened them and then tied them up and then took them one by one into a bathroom and suffocated and strangled them and sodomized at least one of them. So it was a terrible calamity. And later that night, he lay in the hotel room, Gacy on one bed, the three corpses of the boys on the other, and watched television. And then sometime about 2 or 3 in the morning, he loaded the bodies into the truck and drove them back to the south side of Hannibal, and nothing was moving at that time of day. And it was dark, and he found the road had been torn up because of the construction activity, and there were holes along the sides of the roads where they had replaced a sewer pipe. And he dumped the bodies into a hole and then kicked dirt into the hole to cover them, just enough to not be seen. And then left, and then came back about 6 that morning under the guise of being a road construction worker and secured a inloader and put another load of dirt on that hole, tamped it down, and then he took off and left and drove to Little Rock, Arkansas to meet his mother and visit with his sister and mother. Mother's Day was just a few days away.
That is a shocker. Was he able to record his conversation with Gacy?
He was not, no. And that was one of my concerns, having been a TV reporter and investigative journalist for many years. I knew that everyone who came forward wanted attention or had an agenda, so my concern was vetting him. So I interviewed Sean many, many times for many hours, and he never varied once from any of the facts. He was committed to the story and what he was relating. He was very careful. And I even confronted him. I said, "Did you make this up? Have you confabulated facts?" And he said, no, sir, I am a Christian, and I would not do that to the people of Hannibal. So at that point, I thought, okay, well, this seems to be legitimate. So I finished writing the book, and it hit in May of 2023, the updated edition, for people to read and make up their own mind.
Have you gotten any type of feedback from any professionals that are profilers or anything like that? Anybody that actually studied Gacy and his crimes to get their thoughts about his confession?
Yeah, some believe that it's very credible because they know Gacy is very cocky and self-assured, and he loved taking risks. So killing these boys and then burying them essentially at ground zero of this area that was just starting to be searched, you know, for the boys in the caves, right? That was classic Gacy. I mean, this location, this hole where he dumped them in the middle of the night, you could have walked 20 or 25 feet and rang a doorbell. You know, there were houses. So at this point, it's no longer a Rawls County case. It's also a Hannibal, Missouri case, because it's within the city limits.
Before you actually, I know people are going to want to know this. Did you believe in psychics before you wrote this book? I mean, had you, you know, given them any type of honest credibility about their ability to be able to talk to spirits or no?
As a journalist, I had encountered psychics on police investigations when they were looking for bodies and such. And it was kind of a mixed bag in terms of results. Sometimes they found the body, sometimes not. As a Christian, I've kind of, you know, embraced the biblical mandate to kind of avoid this stuff because it's impossible for us to fully understand. We don't always fully know who we're communicating with. It could be three missing boys, or it could be demonic influences that are set on deceiving and sowing more sadness and discontent. But I want to share also something extraordinary that happened right after I had taken all three psychics on a driving tour of the area. And after I'd taken the woman from Wyoming on a tour, all three of the psychics had been with me, and they didn't have any information on the other two. So I kept them apart and kind of siloed. And after I'd taken the third one on the tour, Rawls County, I had an early dinner with Brittany Buckwalter from Hannibal. I wanted to touch base with her and see if she sensed anything more about this astonishing case. And just catch up. She had two cute kids, and her husband was a talented tattoo artist. So it was just while I was in town, touch base. So we were having dinner, and all of a sudden her face darkened and her focus strayed to somewhere beyond. And she looked at me and she said, "Gacy just dropped in. That's how he always does. He just drops in and leaves," she tells me. "And he just had one word, congratulations." And I said, "Congratulations for what? What do you think it means?" Brittany looked me square in the eyes and dropped the bombshell. "It couldn't be any more clear. You've solved the case." Now, Brittany was completely unaware of my activities in Hannibal that day, but somehow the spirit of John Wayne Gacy knew what had been discovered.
Has this shocked you? I mean,
no. What are the odds that the serial killer would show up in, you know, tranquil, pastoral Hannibal, Missouri? But once he was arrested, while he was being driven downtown for arraignment, the detective with him said, "Come on, John. You could save us a lot of legwork here. How many have you killed?" He said, Gacy said, 30 something. And then he paused and said, "Actually, 45 is a good number." Yeah, 45 is a good number. So one of the psychics had an interesting numbers puzzle that she saw. And she just saw these numbers like on a wall, and it was 45, 33, 3, and 9. And I thought, what on earth is this? So I was looking at highway numbers and distances, and then it suddenly dawned on me that the numbers were totally relevant to what we were seeing in the investigation. 45 was the number of kills that Gacy himself admitted that he had. 33 were the 33 victims in Chicago. 3 were the Hannibal boys. Well, 33 and 3 is 36. 36 and 45 is 9. And that says there are 9 more bodies still to be found.
Do you believe that's true or more than likely true?
Actually, I do. After Gacy was, in custody and his paintings had been confiscated, there is one painting of a barn in northern Arkansas. And again, he had relatives in Little Rock. And on the back of this painting of this dilapidated barn, he had scrawled in his handwriting, "Find them if you can." So there are bodies, who knows where, throughout the Midwest. I mean, John Wayne Gacy was a cunning killer, and he could get away with burying these bodies and never be caught.
Especially during that time.
Finally, thankfully, he was in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. And during that time, you're right, people just didn't have, they didn't watch their kids close enough, It's just crazy. And let me ask you something. I think we were really naive. Society was naive, too, back then, when these serial killers
yes.
all came to the forefront of society. I want to ask you also, the hotel that he took the boys to, how far was it from the caves?
Hannibal's a small town, so it was on the western edge of Hannibal near Highway 61. And Gacy at the time, the boys went missing, was actually living in Waterloo, Iowa. He was married, had 2 kids, and was helping his father-in-law manage 3 Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants. And, he had the good life, but he liked to travel. And would travel to Little Rock, and Hannibal was right on the way. So if you go down Highway 61 from Waterloo, Iowa to Hannibal, at the time there were many kind of mom-and-pop hotels along Highway 61 on the edge of Hannibal.
It wasn't far from where the cave search was taking place, correct?
No, probably a 5-minute drive.
Wow, 5-minute drive. Okay.
Yeah, it was close.
Yeah. And is it still there now, or what's there in its place?
Well, time marches on, and a lot of these ma and pa hotels went by the wayside. And the next year, they built a Holiday Inn on the western edge of Hannibal. And it was actually, Gacy actually told Sean that he had killed them at Holiday Inn, but he killed them months before the Holiday Inn was built and opened. So I think Gacy was just confused. I think he had stayed at the Holiday Inn many times during his trips through Hannibal, but not that particular time. And what's really extraordinary is this man who was fencing his paintings, Sean Jackson, had actually encountered Gacy in 1977 when Sean was just 9 years old, and he very well could have been one of Gacy's victims that day in July of 1977. He lived near the Kroger store on the western side of Hannibal, and his mom had sent him to the store for some cold cuts and soda and what have you. While he was checking out, he noticed the heavy gaze of a man a couple back in line just staring at him, and it made him feel very uneasy. Well, he gathered up his things and left the store, and as he was walking home, this guy pulls up in a pickup, and it's the same guy he encountered in the store. And the guy said, "Hey, you want a ride, kid?" And he said, "No, thanks." And just lightning fast, the guy was out of the truck and just inches from Sean's face saying, "I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to give you a ride." And in a move that one can only admire, Sean reaches into his sack of groceries, pulls out a glass bottle of Pepsi, and weaponizes it and hits Gacy right between the eyes with it. And runs off, and Gacy stumbles back and lets the F-word fly, and he escaped. And it was only a year later, when Gacy was finally arrested, that he knew that was the guy who had tried to pick him up the previous summer. And then he realized how close of a call he'd had. He could well have been one of Gacy's early victims. And then later, when Sean was meeting with Gacy, when he was an adult in the early 90s, he meets Gacy for the first time, and Gacy goes, "I know you." And Sean's related the story from about 15 years earlier when he was 9 years old, when Gacy tried to pick him up, and Gacy just nodded and said, "Oh, yeah, no apology, nothing. It was just one more day in the life of a serial killer."
That's chilling. He was so lucky that he did that, you know? I mean, because the guy was merciless. I mean, he just killed and killed and killed until they caught him. I mean, he would have been still doing it for as long as he possibly could. The guy was not going to stop. That's just crazy. I'm really saddened, though, that these boys lost their lives to this guy. That'd be so frightening. Your book, I commend you. This is a really good book. And this is the third edition. It's called Souls Speak, Missing Children Reveal Their Serial Killer from Beyond. John, why don't you tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or where they can keep up with any other projects that you may be working on?
Sure. My books are on Amazon. And my Facebook page is Author John Wingate, all one word. And then I have a blog, and that's at CardiffHill.com. And I post there musings about my research, my investigations, my books. And so you can find all the information. Facebook is the most timely way to find updates on what I'm doing.
My special guest is John Wingate, and the book is called Souls Speak, Missing Children Reveal Their Serial Killer from Beyond, and that is available on Amazon. John, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.